Katie.
I'm Erica.
And this is Book Talk.
Hi, Katie.
Hi, Erica.
Welcome to Book Talk. This is your weekly podcast book club. And this week we are starting a new book. This book is The Woman in the Library by Sulari Gentile. Before we talk about what we read in this section, Katie's going to give us a quick summary and set up what happened so far.
In this first section of The Woman in the Library, we are simultaneously reading Hannah's manuscript while also reading her letters to and from her friend or lover, Leo. Leo's a struggling writer who's helping Hannah, a successful writer, with some scene setting as he's actually living in Boston and Hannah's writing a book about a murder mystery that takes place at the Boston Public Library. Hannah's main character, Freddie, is also writing a book about the same Boston Public Library. And if you were not confused yet, there's a lot of writers and a lot of books being written here. I do feel like the main point is pretty clear. All three of these books, Hannah's, Freddie's, and Sulari's, are all revolving around this main point, which is who screamed in the library and who killed the woman they found under the table. And did that person also hurt Whit? The most important question is, who could be next?
Ooh.
What did you think of this first section?
I don't know if it'll be a surprise or not, but I'm kind of loving this book so far. I love the book within a book, and I just think Leo is doing a lot of our job, which is commenting on the chapters as we go, and I find myself agreeing with him, yet also, towards the end, sort of hating him.
Okay, interesting. I also love the book within a book. I thought that I was going to be really confused reading because we were literally reading a book about a girl who writes a book. But I think because they're all revolving around the same plot, it's easy for me to follow and get into kind of the characters. I have a lot of questions about who Hannah is. And I agree. I loved Leo's kind of critiques of her writing. I love when he corrects her English or British terms. Like, I Googled what a jumper was. I was like, what is this man wearing under his suit jacket? I was just so confused. So I think that part is kind of cute. He's helping her. I think Hannah's in London, maybe.
She's in Australia.
She's in Australia, so it's not British.
It would be British. No, it's British.
Oh, you're right. Okay, she's in Australia. That's right, because he talks to the wildfires all the time. Like, I knew that somewhere deep inside my brain. Okay. I do feel like at the end, Leo's getting a little bit annoying. He's like, did anyone read my manuscript? I'm just so sad no one likes my writing. I'm just not as famous as you, Hannah. And I'm like, okay, Leo, can you get your shit together just a little bit?
I found it strange. I guess we'll find out later, but it's a little weird that we're never reading what Hannah says to him. I think that would provide a little bit more context into their relationship. It's possible that maybe it's like completely one-sided and Leo's writing this to her and she's not responding. But it seems like they're corresponding. So I don't know. Are they friends? Are they lovers? I'm unclear. And also, is Leo a good person or not? I don't know.
I get the vibe that Hannah has friend-zoned Leo and Leo loves Hannah just a little bit. I do think she's corresponding. I think there's a couple things he says like, oh, you answered that, or she's obviously sending him pages also. So she's communicating with him somehow because he's getting this information. I don't know about Leo. I do think it's weird we don't get Hannah's side of it. And I wonder if we're ever going to get her side or if we're just going to learn what happens to Hannah through Leo's perspective, which is kind of one of my predictions. Do you like the interspersing of the letters from Leo to Hannah within the manuscript?
I love it. I think it's very funny. I think Sulari is very self-aware because she herself is Australian, writing a book about Americans set in Boston. So it's sort of like showing her awareness of the limits of her own writing or how your own perspective can sort of bleed into your characters. I think also Leo is literally doing our job by being like, well, it seems pretty obvious at this point that it must be Kane. So like, how are you going to explain that he was at the table when this happened? And like, he's clearly looking bad, which is exactly what I would say, Leo. So he's stealing my ideas.
Leo, you're so smart. I also love in this section, the different kind of methodologies to writing a story. So we get to see I think Cain writing his story, where he has, and then Leo, right? They're very similar, writing out like the whole plot and have like an incident room with all the strings connecting the themes and the people. And then you have Freddie in the story who just wings it. She's just like, whatever comes to me as it happens. I just get to know the characters. I feel like we hear a lot of authors say that. Like, I didn't know that about this character yet. Or as I got to know her, this is of course what she would do, which I just still find so interesting. People are writing books that way. I do just want to say my usual comment that the names in this book are insane. When they were introducing them, and they were like Marigold, Freddie, Wit, and Cain, I was like, are you joking?
But that's also funny because they're also like characters in a book. So it's like, this is the story that Hannah is writing. Which right. is why their characters are insane. But that's like, that's why their names are crazy.
Yeah.
Because they're not real. Which is, it's like we're watching a show with the person who made the show that's being paused and critiqued as we go. I don't know. It's fascinating. I love this format. I think it's so funny.
I think it is also funny, and I'm very entertained when reading it. I love the pulling us out of the story too. I feel like I want to know what's going to happen next, but I also want to know what Leo thinks about it. And I feel like it's crazy talented that Leo's kind of calling out all the things that I would. Like, I can't figure out who the murderer would actually be at this point because it seems like Cain is involved. But every time Leo's like, I mean, the way that you have set this up, it's going to have to be really complicated if it's Cain, just so you know. Can't wait to see how you figure this out. And I'm like, same. How are you going to figure this out? Who could possibly have killed this person?
The only thing I wish is that Leo's letters didn't come at the end of every chapter. I kind of wish they were like less often because these chapters are fast. And I kind of find him annoying. Like at a certain point, just get over it, dude. Or call her or text her.
But the romance of the letters.
I don't think they're romantic because she writes a character like Leo in, which is Freddie's friend, who's also a writer staying at the same house that she is. And I think that Leo's like, oh, that's me. That's so funny. And maybe it is.
I think it is him. And I think in that section, he's like, okay, can Leo be like a little better, a little more cool, a little more interesting? Hannah's like, no, sorry, dude. This is you. Exactly. She has friend zoned him.
Totally. Okay. Let's talk about the plot of the book within the book. So we have these four characters who are sitting at the same table and sort of all like observing each other without them all being aware of it. What do you think about these four characters, how they met, like the foursomes meet cute, and then how their relationship has developed since then?
I think their meet cute was very cute. And I thought it was hilarious that two of them were writers. And I loved that Marigold, Freud girl, was just reading over her shoulder blatantly descriptions. She's like, I like the how you wrote that. I like how you wrote me. I'm into it. So I thought the meet cute was very funny. I think it is a little bit unrealistic that all four of these characters, who are pretty different, become immediate best friends. I think Cain and Freddie have some kind of little romance going on, same as Wit and Marigold. So now we've all just met, become immediate best friends, and fallen in love with each other very, very quickly. Also, I feel like none of them have any prior commitments. Like, no one's busy. Cain and Freddie are writing a book, and Marigold and Wit are like, well, we might write a book too, or we'll at least hang out with you while you do. Y'all don't have anything to do? No other friends?
Well, conveniently, Wit is trying to fail out of law school, and Marigold has said, like, she doesn't even need to go to classes. She's so smart. So of, like, all the people who have the most amount of time in their lives, it's definitely students and writers. Just, like, the unstructured time.
That's fair.
I do think they have some sort of like connection between the four of them that they all like want to keep going. And I've had that with some people where you're like, oh my God, I love this. Let's hang out every single day because like we have some sort of magic. And they have a task, like they're trying to figure out what is going on. And one of them, we're led to believe, is a killer. So that person is very motivated to keep tabs on the other three. Or the other two. Or the other one.
That's true. That line was so good. Or the other one, right. That line was so good. Like, I just had my first coffee with a killer. So then one of the four of them did it. And it's just figuring out who it could possibly be. I agree. I think certain situations happen when you have, like, form a connection with these people, especially through a shared experience, like something happening to you, where it becomes a lot more – like intimate or the friendship grows a lot faster because of this shared thing or shared trauma or shared situation that happened. And nobody else will really get it the same way that those people do. So I do understand that. Okay. This plot question that I have is, I was reading this book before I went to bed last night and I was like, it's not that creepy. It's going to be fine. For some reason, this phone call, when they call the voicemail back and the person picks up the phone and then uses the voicemail machine or whatever to play back the message, was so creepy to me. I was like, well, I don't like that. Someone has the phone and they're just, who has it?
Ugh. Yeah, that part's weird. They're like, somehow they have a recording of this woman's scream, which could not have been one of the four of them unless they were somehow recording on their phone.
Well, it could have been, yeah.
Oh, no, that's weird. I interpreted it as they somehow were playing, like, she had called Kane's phone and it had somehow given her, like, you know, you can click a couple buttons and go to your voicemail. You used to have to do this to check your voicemail, call your own phone number to, like, get to your voicemail box. Right. So I thought that's what happened, not that they were playing it back to her.
No, that's what happened, was he was playing it back to her. He picks up the phone, like answers it, and then plays the message she left Kane, gushing and thanking him for the grocery box, which was pretty cute. I just feel like there's something creepy about this cell phone situation. Even though I can't fully understand what's happening yet or who has it, I feel like Kane is intricately involved, as they all are, but Kane more so, in this situation. And now that the killer is getting closer, that Whit is injured, that he was outside of Freddy's door, he or she was outside of Freddy's door, I think that they're going to be more involved to figure out who it is at this point. I just don't know how Kane's going to get out of it.
The difficult part right now is that Kane seems most likely, so it won't be him, because that'll just be boring. And then Whit has been stabbed, so that makes it seem like it's not Whit.
Okay, but Whit could have been trying to kill somebody and they reacted in self-defense and stabbed him.
That's true. So Whit could have been trying to attack somebody else, but then who was he trying to attack that hasn't come forward?
Right.
That's an open question. And then Marigold at least seems to have some stalking, because they've seen her on CCTV outside of Whit's house 5 times.
Also, Marigold, what the hell? I would also like to note that it is Whit's parents' house, which is another level of creepy. And she's like, they're going to think I'm so weird. Like,
yeah,
you went to his house 5 times.
In a weird, creepy way.
Did not knock. Also, I get that she's playing this, like, innocent, shy person who just couldn't knock on the door. But she doesn't seem that shy. That doesn't, like, fully fit her personality. I don't know. Maybe it's Marigold.
Maybe it's
Marigold. That also seems too obvious. I feel like, okay, my prediction is either that maybe it's something semi-obvious, like it's going to be Freddy or Leo. But I also feel like there's something's going to happen with Hannah and Leo, our authors in this book that are kind of writing back and forth about Hannah's manuscript. For some reason, I have this feeling that Leo is going to be like, Hannah, I didn't believe it when they told me. I didn't know you had actually killed someone. Something like that. Like, something's going to happen with Hannah, our mystery narrator, who's really kind of the puppeteer behind this entire situation.
I had a similar thought. Like, Leo has to be here for more than just color commentary, because we're also learning a lot about him in these letters. And it seems like, why would you waste space just for a funny aside? It must be important in some way.
Yep. Or maybe Leo's going to, he does mention casually a murder on Mass Avenue in Boston, and he's like, but you wouldn't notate that in your book, it was pretty insignificant here, because, you know, in America people get shot all the time and we just move on from it. So anyways, it's insignificant because this was a small murder on Mass Street, so you can just move on and it wasn't even included in your book. And I wonder if something's going to happen that Leo's going to witness or be implicated in, or if Hannah's going to, or if Hannah's going to come to America. I don't know.
There's also some money. Like, there's some wealthy families. There was this event that this person was supposed to be at. I think there's more to the context of why the library, why this person, and how does she, her name's Caroline, how does she kind of loop back to the other characters? Because she's a student. She knows Wit, but she's also could be tied to Marigold. She could also be tied to Kane. Like, we don't know. I think there's some, like, money story in here, too.
And they do talk about specifically those, like, elite circles and that, you know, families that run in those social classes. So I agree. Something might come back.
Because my question is, why Boston? If not to use the universities and the prestige, and then also why the library? Mm-hmm. Like, what was going on at the library that she was killed there? I think that's going to be important.
Also, yeah, it seems like a very, maybe this is the point, a very public place and also a very, like, quiet and unexpected place. Maybe that's the point of it, the terror of that.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay, last thing. Overall, what are you thinking so far? Do you like it?
I'm loving it. I feel like I'm already into it. I want to know what happens. I love these characters. I think it's super easy to read. I've been kind of in a reading slump, just like starting books and not loving them. And I'm trying this new thing now where if like I'm not hooked in 60 pages, I'm just not wasting my time. And I feel like this one I'm hooked. I'm here. I did put down another book this week that I was just not into.
Ooh, something for Talk Talk.
Something for Talk Talk.
All right, well, we'll see what happens. I feel like so much plot already happened. I'm already invested. I can't wait to see all the twists and turns. Next week, we're reading chapters 10 through the end of chapter 18. Okay, I read two books. The first book was A Certain Hunger by Chelsea G. Summers. This is about a very affluent elderly food writer and critic who also is a cannibal and has a habit of killing her ex-lovers and then eating parts of them. And I had heard about this book. It's definitely recommended alongside Otessa Moshfegh. It's sort of in this like dark female protagonist field or genre. Chelsea used to be a professor of English, and you can definitely tell because it's so dense and like the way it's written is really beautiful, but like a ton of words I've never heard before. And sometimes I think towards the end, the words get in the way of the plot where I just wanted to know what was going to happen. Like, I don't need a long, beautifully written sentence when you've got such a good plot. But I think that means the book is amazing because it's got really good writing and a really good plot and you're trying to figure out what's happening and what's going to happen.
I love this description of these things were happening. I didn't know if I liked them, but I think that that means it's amazing.
Well, it's like your writing is so good, but also the plot is so good. I want to read it faster than I can. That's like a good feeling. I'm like, I had to know what was going to happen. There's definitely a lot of rich and delicious descriptions of Italian cooking specifically and being in Italy. And then she tells you about how she murders someone in just as much detail. And you're like, ah, yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. So it's,
I'm not sure I need those in the same level of detail, the same level of visuals there. I don't think that.
It is like Night Bitch by Rachel Yoder, that level of like gore and like sort of body horror with a rather charming narrator who, outside of her being a cannibal, you and I would probably want to hang out with because she's very opinionated. She loves good food, good wine. Don't we all love a good meal? And sometimes that's like the liver of her ex-lover. And, you know,
oh my God. I mean, I like foie gras, but Jesus.
So it was funny. I liked it. It's not for everyone. If you're into that type of book, you're into it.
Sounds like an Erica book.
Then I read The Paper Palace.
Oh my God, finally. I saw someone reading at the pool this week, and I was wondering if you actually finished it.
I finished it. I read it by a lake. Let me tell you, that is not a book to read by the lake or by the pool. You should have taken the book out of that person's hand and given them The Woman in the Library because it was intense.
Oh no.
It is the story of this older woman who's married with kids, and she's still in love with her childhood sweetheart who is also married with kids.
Oh, yeah. We talked about the plot. And they're at the beach house, and they finally hook up, right?
Yeah. And you sort of don't understand why they have not been together, because they were, like, in love with each other as kids. And then you figure out why. And it's not a good reason. It's a very dark reason. I won't spoil it. And it's just, there's like a lot. I would really check the trigger warnings, because this book was a lot. I liked it, but it was not, I think I expected like a lighthearted beach sort of torrid love affair. And you get that, but there's a lot more to their stories that is painful and tough to read.
Do you feel like the intensity was worth it? Like, I know we had talked about previous authors who, it seems that they're using these dark situations and it's unnecessary. It doesn't add anything to the plot. Do you feel like they were necessary to move the plot along or to get you emotionally invested in the story?
I don't know. I'm sort of undecided about whether I really liked it or not. It's tough. It's a tough book to read. I think the difficult part, as always with me, is that I went into it with some really strong expectations, and then those expectations were not what the book, like, it's just not the type of book that you think. I feel like the name Paper Palace and the cover, you're like, oh, a lovely Cape Cod torrid love affair, and then it's like, no, it's like there's a lot more going on. People who've read it will understand exactly what I'm talking about.
I feel like I want to read it just to know what you're talking about. Okay.
It's funny because that book is not as dark as A Certain Hunger, and yet much more dark. I think it's much more realistic. And when it's like the violence is too realistic, it's a different type of uncomfortable experience. Home. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed. Okay. I put down a book. I put down The Woman in the Light. I cannot get into it. I tried so hard and I wanted to like this book, but I'm 65 pages in and I still have no good idea what's happening. I'm not invested at all in any of these characters or understanding the plot. It's hard to read. The timelines are really hard. So it takes place, the different timelines are like the 1830s, the 1910s, and the 1920s. And the things that are happening are very similar, and it's just really hard to keep track of. And I was like, this is not entertaining me. It's requiring me to like put so much effort into reading it, and for what? And I will put effort into reading books if they have like setting a timer and being like, okay, just read for 30 minutes. If it's something like Obama's book where I was like, I really want to read this, and I know that I'm not into it, but it's a journey, but not for a random fiction book. So I finally finished a 700 page book, Things We Never Got Over. And I know I texted you kind of my thoughts for it. I think for a 700 page book, I was not upset at it. Like, there's a lot that happens, a lot that goes on, a lot of really well-developed side plots or subplots and characters. I think I just could not get over the relationship between the men in this book and the women. Like, they can be aggressive and controlling, and it's portrayed as being super hot, and it is at times, but it also is like just very, very gendered and very like the damsel in distress. I didn't love it. I didn't love the reasons that they're falling in love with these women are really because like they need to be protected. And I don't know. I can't really explain it except that it just felt very gendered and outdated, and I didn't love it. And I think sometimes the scenes are a little bit too much at the expense of the plot, especially like some of the sex scenes. But overall, I mean, it is 11 out of 10 spicy if that's what you're looking for. Wasn't bad. It is TikTok buzzy. The last one I read was a random purchase. I went to Barnes & Noble to get, which I know, not great, but whatever. I went to Barnes & Noble to get The Woman in the Library. And then I bought The Goldfinch, which is one of my favorite books, also 700 pages, just so that I owned a copy because I don't know where mine is. And then I randomly picked out a rom-com on the way out, which I read in like a day and a half, which was Written in the Stars. It's about it's about two girls. This one girl, Darcy, is I can't remember exactly what she does, but she's like a hotshot executive of some kind. And then the girl that she falls in love with, Elle, I cannot remember her name. Elle is an astrologer and she runs a social media platform, and she's like very flighty. She's constantly in like rainbow Doc Martens and like absurd dresses. She's hilarious. And it's like the fake relationship trope to get their parents to stop bothering them about being with someone, that come to Thanksgiving and I'll fake your Christmas dinner. It's cute. It was easy to read. Their love story was adorable. So Recommend that. Also a cute little Pride Month read. And then right now I started reading You're Invited by Amanda Jayatissa. The tagline for this book is, what could be worse than your ex-boyfriend marrying your childhood best friend? Which that actually happened to me, which is hilarious. And it says, what could be worse? Getting accused of her murder. It's a dangerously addictive new thriller about a lavish Sri Lankan wedding celebration that not everyone survives.
Ooh.
I just thought I'd read a couple of murder mysteries at the same time.
Fun.
Yeah, it looks cute. I'm excited. And by cute, I mean terrifying. But I'm excited.
Okay. Well, keep us posted.
Yay.
Well, see you next week.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Book Talk is made by me, Erica Bailey, and Katie Cheney, with production support from Dan White. Our theme music is by Dan White. We'll see you next week.
Last week on the episode, you're like, do you want to talk? And I'm like, do you want to talk? I was like, oh God, we're so annoying.
We are who we are.